last of a special sermon series we've been doing about love, sex, and marriage called Love Songs. Our culture has a lot of different ideas about those topics, and sometimes it's easiest to see what our world is saying in the songs that we sing about. This morning, we're talking about singleness. You know, maybe you've been with us for 4 weeks, and you've heard 4 weeks of love songs and 4 weeks of sermons on marriage and relationships, and maybe Love Stinks is a song that you resonate with a little bit more because you're tired of hearing about all these relationship sermons. Single people, this morning is for you. Okay, you waited patiently for 4 weeks. I promise you get a sermon on singleness, so here it is. But married people, don't check out just because you're talking to single people mainly this morning. There's some nuggets of truth in here. It can be beneficial both for our marriages and our personal faith as well. So I encourage you to come along on this journey with us. We're going to be looking at a couple different passages this morning, starting our journey in a biblical love song called the Song of Songs, chapter 5. So if you've got your Bibles, why don't you open up the Song of Songs, chapter 5 this morning. As you're turning there, let me tell you, we're going to have three foundational truths that are going to be significant to our message this morning. The first one is going to be talked about in this passage, and it goes like this. Sex and marriage are good, but they are not God. Sex and marriage are good, but they are not God. And that may seem like an obvious statement, but truth be told, somebody needs to tell the rest of our culture this truth, because our culture tends to idolize sex and even marriage at times, putting them on a pedestal so high that even it's even greater than what God designed these things for. As good and great as sex and marriage are, they are not God.
But when we get that priority mixed up, it throws everything else in our lives out of order, and people tend to get hurt when that priority is messed with. Case in point, single people. If you're single, you live in a world where you hear pretty much every day that you're supposed to be in a relationship, or you're supposed to be married, or sex is supposed to be a regular part of your adult life and experience. And if none of those things apply to me, I might start to feel a little awkward or uncomfortable in this world. I might start to feel a little isolated. I might start to feel like maybe there's something wrong with me, something deficient with me. Single people, nod if I'm hitting the nail on the head here, if you've had that feeling before. All right, a couple of you, you're tracking with me. You see, single people, I need you to understand, there's nothing wrong and there's nothing deficient with you. God didn't create you that way. Culture gave you that name, not him. The reality is that even in the church, we don't always do a great job of elevating singleness to the spot that it desires. Even in the church, we get this priority mixed up sometimes. By way of example, if you take just the books that are written in Christian circles and just look at the books and the conversations that are happening there, ChristianBooks.com, it's probably the largest Christian book distributor next to Amazon. So it's a pretty good gauge of the conversations that are happening, the thoughts and the material that are available to people. If you were to look at all of the books on that website directed at Christian singles, you would find a whopping 67 titles. And it's not hard to sort through those and read all the titles. About half of those treat singleness not as something worthwhile, but as something you just kind of have to get through and survive until you find that person that you're married to. 67 books. Compare that to the number of books written about marriage directed at Christian people. You have to sort through north of 3,000 different titles. All right, 67, 3,000. There's a huge disparity here. And I understand that you have to write to where the market is because writers got to get paid too, but 67 versus 3,000 plus, what that says to me is that even in the church, we've not really given singleness the attention or consideration that it deserves. And that's what this morning is about. We want to look at what God has to say about the value of singleness, because sex and marriage, they are good, but they are not God. And when we get that priority mixed up, we run the risk of forgetting our second foundational truth this morning. Well, let me back up. We should probably read our passage first, shouldn't we? And so when we talk about sex and marriage being good, we sometimes elevate marriage beyond even what the Bible gives it. Look at Song of Songs, chapter 5, verse 4. It says, "My beloved thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him." Now, this is a woman writing about her experience on her wedding night, okay? This is after the ceremony. This is after they've come together in their marital responsibilities and pleasures. And so this is her reflection on what's happened, okay? She says, "My beloved thrust his hand through the latch opening." That's a double entendre. Verse 5, I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the bolt. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but I did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. And so this woman, this is kind of a dreamlike metaphor she's reflecting on, okay? Her husband didn't actually leave physically. He's right next to her. But this is sort of her inner reflection of her experience. And on the one hand, she wants to be with her husband. She wants to be with this guy. But on the other hand, there's a lot of apprehension and wrestling with what that means for her life, the changes that are going to take place in her understanding of herself and in her society and so on. We see those as we keep reading. Verse 7, it says, the watchman, that's a figure that represents all those emotions, the watchman found me as they made their rounds in the city. They beat me, they bruised me, they took away my cloak, those watchmen of the walls. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my beloved, what will you tell him? Tell him that I'm faint with love. And so we see in this picture, here's this woman who is deeply in love with her husband. She wants to be married to him. For four chapters, she's talked about how much she desires to be with him and to belong to him and for him to belong to her. But even after the wedding night, even after they've come together, there's this inner wrestling. Because marriage didn't fix her problems. Marriage didn't fill in the information of who she is. It didn't fill the hole in her heart. Marriage, there's a lot of wrestling that still happens there. And here's where I'm going with this, okay? This song is all about sex and marriage and love and what a blessing and what a gift they are. But even this song that's all about those things doesn't put marriage on this unattainable pedestal as if it's going to fill the hole in our hearts or if it's going to tell us who we really are, fix our problems. There's still a process. Marriage doesn't become a blessing and a gift until after all of this happens. And even then, she only finds satisfaction in a relationship because she's found the right guy, whom she's going to say in verse 16 is both her beloved and her friend, that special combination of people. So marriage is good. Marriage is great, but it's not God. Single people, it's not going to answer the questions we have about ourselves. It's not going to give us that satisfaction that we're longing for. It's not going to give us the direction in life that sometimes our culture tells us it will. It's really, really good, but it's not God. And that brings us now to our second foundational truth. Sorry, I got things mixed up there for a minute. Our second foundational truth. God has a plan for sex and marriage and singleness. Sometimes that last part doesn't get talked about enough. God has a plan for sex and marriage and singleness. Single people, your singleness is not a curse that has befallen you, and it's not a punishment for anything. And married people, your single friends do not need you to set them up with anybody. They do not need you to say, well, have you tried this? Or have you talked to this person? Or maybe have you checked them? They don't need that. If they want your help, they'll ask. Yeah, thank you, sister. All right. They don't need your help. God's sovereignty is not limited to people who wear wedding bands, okay? God has a plan for singleness as well. And there's a passage in the New Testament, the book of 1 Corinthians that we're going to look at. Single people, this has the potential to change your understanding of singleness. Let's look at it. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It's going to be verse 25, so it's like two-thirds of the way through the chapter. This is a conversation we're getting in the middle of, and it goes like this. Now, about virgins, and we could understand that as single people, just in a general context, because all this applies. Now, about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who, by the Lord's mercy, is trustworthy. In other words, God didn't hand down from the sky what I'm about to say. However, I do have some understanding of God's wisdom. And so the Apostle Paul, who wrote this, is going to say, here's a very wise word of advice, okay? Verse 26, because of the present crisis, I think that it's good for a man to remain as he is. Are you pledged to a woman? Meaning, are you engaged? Do not seek to be released. Are you free from such a commitment? Are you not engaged? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you've not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she's not sinned. But those who marry, listen to this, those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this. Real quick, if you're married, I want you to lean over to the person next to you and say this. Marriage is not easy. Go and do that. Okay, now if you're single and somebody just said that to you, I want you to say, thanks for being honest. Okay, and if your spouse just said that to you, I want you to say, I know, I'm married to you, right? Marriage is not always easy. There will be troubles in marriage. And sometimes those troubles come about just by the simple fact that two different people are trying to live together under the same roof and make things work. That alone will add complication and trouble to life. Case in point, my wife and I were driving somewhere the other day. She was driving, wasn't 100% sure how to get there, so she was asking some directions. And we were coming up on an intersection. And she said, "Do I turn here at the next one?" And in my mind, the intersection that we're approaching is the next one, spatially in relationship to our vehicle. That is next. And so I said, "Turn at the next one." And so she drove through that and went down a block too far. And I said, "What are you doing?" She says, "You said go to the next one." I said, "The one that we passed was the next one." She said, "No, the next one is the next one." I said, "What are you talking about? Relationally to our vehicle, that was the next one." And it went back and forth like that for a while. And that's marriage in a nutshell. All right? It's two people who have different perspectives, trying to communicate, trying to live together, trying to make things work, even though they have a world of differences between them. That's going to cause some troubles in and of itself. But sometimes those troubles are a little weightier and more significant, too. There's a reason that we stand in front of the altar and in front of God and everybody we care about. We make a vow to have and to hold, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. We make that promise because marriage is not some fairy tale that always has a happy ending. Sometimes things get worse, guys. Sometimes marriage is hard. Sometimes your spouse gets laid off or they get fired or they get injured and they can't go back to work and money gets tight and the bills start to pile up and the stress weighs down on you as the sole provider for your family. And you might start to think, you know, things would be a lot easier if it were just me, if I just had my needs to take care of or my bills to pay. It would be a lot easier if I didn't have to carry this other person too. But you can't leave because you made a vow, for richer or poorer, to be there, to stand side by side, even suffer side by side if need be. And you made a promise to be there in sickness and in health. There's a reason we make that, because sometimes our spouses get sick. And I'm not talking about the flu. Sometimes there are illnesses that take the strength, that take the lucidity, that take the life from our spouse, and we have to be there to care for them, to take care of them, to be that strength, to be that energy, and it's draining. And it gets tempting to think, you know what, it'd be easier if it was just me. I just want some time for myself to do the things for me that fill me up. I watched my grandfather take care of my grandmother who had ALS. And I watched her body slowly shut down, and I watched him have to do everything for her. And it took a toll. He lost weight. His hair turned gray. His life was poured into just caring for her. And I know he had to have those thoughts. It would be so much easier. But they made a vow to be there together, side by side, for sickness or health. Marriage means staying by each other's side, even suffering next to each other if need be. It's a promise. Single people, you are not obligated to anybody in this way. Let that sink in for just a second. Okay, your singleness is not a curse. You are blessed with relational simplicity. Are there joys in marriage? Absolutely. You can have the joy of two people in two lifetimes, but I promise you, you will also have the burdens of two people in two lifetimes. There is a gift in singleness. Our passage goes on to say a little bit more about this too. Look at verse 29. He says, "What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not, and those who mourn as if they did not, and those who are happy as if they were not, and those who buy something as if it weren't theirs to keep, those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs and how he can please the Lord, but a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world and how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided. Likewise, an unmarried woman or a virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit, but a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord." Here's a little theology lesson for all of us. This world that we are living in right now is wrapping up, folks. It is passing away. And that process, it may take a year, it may take 1,000 years. We don't know. God didn't give us a timeline. But he has been very clear. This is the last phase of human history. After this, he's doing a whole new thing. He's bringing in a whole new joy, a whole new kingdom. It's something to look forward to. And with that information in mind, what our passage is encouraging us is to not get too attached to this world that's passing away. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to get connected to something that's on the way out when you know something new and something better is coming. For example, I was trying to build a computer one time, and I wanted to do it cheap. Imagine that. And so I got a lot of old parts from my grandpa that he just had laying around, stuff that was 6, 7 years old. And then whatever he didn't have, I bought new from a store. And when I got all the parts together, I ran into a problem because all the old parts had connectors and wires that didn't fit with the new technology. It had moved on. It had evolved. And this old technology, it had passed away. It was done. It was on its way out. And I had pinned my whole project and my whole build on technology that was already outdated. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But sometimes that's what we do with our lives. And we put all our eggs in the basket of the here and the now, and we get weighed down with the things and the concerns of this world, forgetting that God is bringing a whole new thing pretty soon. Something worth looking forward to, something worth giving our lives and our attention and our focus to. And here's where we get back on topic, okay? Marriage, as good and great as it is the number one divider of our attention and our focus. As our passage said, on the one hand, we want to give our heart to God. We want to do what he calls us to do. We want to be who he calls us to be. But on the other hand, we have obligations and responsibilities and attachments to this world, to our marriages, to our spouses, to our families. And sometimes that can create a division and a tension in our lives. I had a really, really busy week this past week. Monday, we had a board meeting here, so I didn't get home till 7:30, 8 o'clock. Then Tuesday, the staff and I, we took a field trip to Springfield, check out a couple other churches and talk to them about some changes that we're thinking about and kicking around. So we didn't get back until about 7:30, I think. Wednesday, we had date night here at the church, and so it was probably 8:30 before we got everything cleaned up and I got home. And so Thursday was like the first day where I actually got to sit down with my wife and have a meaningful conversation. It was a really busy week. And all of that stuff needed to happen for this church to move forward, to be the church that God's calling it to be, and to move forward in this mission that he's given us. And I'm not complaining about my job, by the way, because the same thing applied to Chris, and the same thing applied to Brian, and the same thing applies to each and every one of us in this room, actually. Because there's something that God is calling each and every one of us to. The person he is calling us to be, something, some task he's calling us to serve towards. He has a mission for our lives. And on the one hand, we feel this and we want to go where God calls us to go and be who God calls us to be and grow in the way he calls us to grow. But at the same time, we have this attachment to our family, to our spouse, to our kids. And we only have 24 hours in a day and so much attention and so much focus. And sometimes we can feel ourselves pulled in two different directions. Because I want to serve on this ministry team, or I want to be a part of this small group, or I want to be a part of this men's group or this women's group, and I want to grow, and I want to take that active step forward in this faith that I have. But at the same time, my family needs me over here. And we can feel this tension, we can feel this frustration, even a little bit of guilt sometimes in trying to divide ourselves. That's what our passage is talking about here. Single people, once again, you do not have these obligations. You are free to do what God calls you to do. You are free to be who God calls you to be, to take the steps needed to grow into that person. Your singleness is not a curse. You are blessed with relational simplicity. And I know singleness is not easy, okay? Because you have the same urges and the same feelings that every normal red-blooded human being has on this planet. There are unique challenges to being single, but there are also unique challenges to being married. What I want you to do this morning is to understand that your singleness is not a burden. It's actually a gift that God has given you. Now, it may be a gift that is temporary. It may be a gift that lasts forever. I don't know. But what I do know is that it is significant because you have the freedom to be who God calls you to be and to do what he calls you to do. Sex and marriage are good, but they're not God. That brings us to our last foundational truth that I want to talk about this morning. Only God deserves to be God in our lives. Only God deserves to have that priority, that number one seat in our lives. Nothing else deserves that attention, that focus, and that priority. And when we put things in that seat, that's when life starts to get messy and messed up. And this has always been a struggle for human beings. We've always had this temptation to get the priority mixed up, to put family and marriage first and God second. Jesus himself had to address the situation. Look at Matthew chapter 10, verse 34. You can follow on the screen. He says, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household." This is Jesus. Keep that in mind. "Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And whoever finds their life will lose it. And whoever loses their life for my sake will find it." Now, Jesus doesn't actually want us to make enemies in our own households, okay? He's kind of using hyperbole here to make his point. He's addressing this temptation that we all have to put people, the people that we love and care about, in the number one priority and to put God second. And what he's telling us is that doesn't work, guys. It's not going to fly. When we get the priority wrong, that's when life starts to fall apart and get messy, when you get stuff in the wrong order. Case in point, look at this tattoo for a second. It might be a little hard to see, but take a look at there. Read it carefully. Okay, this guy had a plan going into this tattoo parlor, okay? Regardless of how you feel about tattoos, he had a plan. He had a message that was significant to him. It's a pretty nice font. The tattoo artist obviously has some skill, but this guy got some stuff in the wrong order, and now he's just filled with a whole lot of regret. Okay? Same thing can happen to us when we get stuff in the wrong order. We can fill our lives with a lot of regret. Because our priority, our goal is probably to give our family, to give our spouse the love and attention they deserve. Believe it or not, that's not going to happen by making them the number one priority in our lives. When God is where he is supposed to be, that's when we learn to love our spouses the best, the way that they deserve. You think about it this way. Who is going to teach you how to love deeper? Your spouse or Jesus? Now, I want you to understand, your spouse is an amazing person. I want you to look at your spouse, say, "You're an amazing person." That's not a joke. Go ahead and do it. You got to dig yourself out from that "I'm married to you" comment you made earlier. All right, your spouse is an amazing person. They love you deeply, but your spouse has probably never laid their life down for you. And they have probably never taken upon themselves the full brunt of the consequences of your actions. They have probably never paid for your mistakes, your crimes, or your shortcomings by taking it in their own flesh so that you can go free and have peace and life. But Jesus has done all of that. He has withheld nothing from you, not even his own life. Your spouse is great, but Jesus is better. So if you want to talk about who's going to teach you to love more, the answer is Jesus. And the same is true of grace and patience and faithfulness. I mean, Jesus, let's talk about grace for a minute. He keeps no record of wrongs. Husbands, your wife is great, but I guarantee you there's a record, okay? She remembers that one thing you did that one time. But Jesus chooses not to be able to remember. That's the extent of his grace. You want to talk about patience. Every single day, he waits for us. He waits for us to come home. He waits for us to turn our ways around. He waits for us to take that next step closer to him. He is patient par excellence. You talk about faithfulness. He stands by every single one of his promises. He stands by every single one of his people, regardless of whether or not we are faithful to him. That is the extent of his faithfulness and his commitment to his word. Our spouses are amazing people, but they don't hold a candle to Jesus. So if we want to learn to love deeper, if we want to learn to be more gracious, patient, faithful people, God needs to be where God belongs. And when he is where he belongs, everything else starts to line up. We begin to love our spouses the way God designed them to be loved and so on. Sex, marriage, they're great, but they're not God. Single people, this message is primarily for you. I want you to understand that you are not cursed, that your singleness has significance. And I want you to use this time that you have to get to know that amazing God and to grow in that God and to serve that God. But married people, I want you to hear this message too. Our marriages are significant and they're important, but they are not the number one priority in our lives. There's only one God that can sit on the throne. So make sure it's the right one. I've had a lot of fun in this series. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. It's been a fun topic. We're going to wrap it up today. And so I just want to thank you. Some of you may have appreciated the music at the beginning. Some of you may not have. And so I want to thank you for being gracious there as well. And I want to pray for you guys before we wrap up today. So let's pray. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for both the blessing of marriage and the blessing of singleness and the different potentials that they hold. In your body and in your church, there's room for everybody. There is a place for everybody, and there's a significance for everybody in every station of life. And I pray that we would recognize those and be blessed by them because they're gifts. I pray that we would all be encouraged, whether we are married, single, or whatever. I just ask that at the end of the day, you would be the only God in our lives, that you alone would sit on the throne, and that we would learn to put Jesus where he belongs, to learn from his love, to learn from his grace, to learn from the gift that he's given us, that we might be changed and know you. It's in Jesus' name that we pray these things. Amen.